Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, which means one thing. I'm here to talk about a couple of things that happened in the sport of football. Happy Monday, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you guys are going to listen to this audio. It's time for the Daily Blitz First Edition. First official podcast, stumbling over my words here. It's time for the Daily Blitz's first official podcast, Monday Evening Quarterback, here on Spotify, YouTube, Twitch, Blog Talk Radio, and the Nerdport Network. My name is Christian Simpson, and I am the creator. I'm the founder. I'm the NFL and college football analyst, radio contributor, and blogger of a company called The Daily Blitz, where we specialize in everything football 24/7, 365. We're going to be talking about a lot today, a wild week two in college, and a lot. One crazy thing happened. A lot of people thought it should have happened last year, but it happened on Saturday night. Week one of the NFL is underway. One more game to go. We're going to talk about that a little later before we end the show. And before I get into anything else, this episode is sponsored by the great folks at Homage. If you like vintage apparel and comfortable hoodies and sweatshirts like yours truly, this is the site for you. I will post the link to Homage on the website when I post the show later tonight. And as always, I'm not alone. I have my producer slash my co-host and a guy that just makes my life a hell of a lot easier with me. He's the reason why I'm on the Nerdport on the Nerd Zone with the Nerdport Network every Wednesday. I got Mr. RK, Mr. Nerdport Network himself. Ronnie, what's going on? How you doing
today? And I've got to say, in all honesty, it's the biggest piece of dog shit that I have ever heard.
I'm good. What's going on?
Here's the one thing I want y'all to realize about this. Between me and him, he's that one. He's that one that just doesn't care. So, look, all those sound bites and things you guys hear, that's all him. I have nothing. I know nothing about it before the show. Look, I give him the game plan for what the show's going to be about, and then he just adds his own little twist into it. So that's all him. But what's going on, Ronnie?
Oh, you know. Just reflecting back on what was.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I'm glad you said that. You know, this is my first anniversary for September 11th back home on the East Coast. You know, I'm going to take it back here. I was 9 years old when this happened. I was 10 years old. And I was living in Illinois. I remember going on my way to school and hearing on the radio out there on B96 in Chicago, that a plane hit the Empire State Building. And I'm like, wait, what? Then the news reporter corrects himself, and then he says that a plane hit one of the towers of the World Trade Center, and then another one hit, and then it ended up being the worst terrorist attack in American history. Just didn't happen in New York. A plane crashed in Pennsylvania and a plane crashed on the Pentagon. So you're going to hear a lot of theme music inspired by New York hip hop, because I thought that was the best way I could pay homage to today. So the first song that we played to break in the show was actually a song from 2002, Cam'ron, Jay-Z, and Joel Santana, Welcome to New York City, produced by Just Blaze on the 2002 hit album Come Home With Me by Camera. I still bump that album to this very day. Ronnie, what's going through your mind as you think of September 11th and it being the 22-year anniversary today?
Honestly, because it literally happened in, like, legitimately, like, I was in middle school. It's something that happened in my backyard. Like, I wouldn't say numb to it, but it kind of is what that is, because it's just another, after it happened, it's like, it's just another day. You still remember, it's still sad, but it's kind of like, you know, you just realize that, especially being around football.
Yeah.
I'm used to going to Jet games, even when this was happening, when it was the first year, looking through New York and just seeing all that, and it's just, you still remember it, but you don't still, it doesn't grasp the fact of it because it's been 20 plus
years. Yeah, 22 years. So, you know, I think I say this on behalf of both of us. You know, we offer thoughts, prayers, and condolences to everyone who tragically lost a life on this day. Who knew that, you know, we were going to wake up to something like this the next day? You know, you go to bed Monday, September 10th, 2001, and the next day, you know, you hear this. You know what I'm saying? Look, I think I say that on both of our behalfs about September 11th. You know, we just offer our prayers and our thoughts and our condolences, and I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get exactly what you're saying. So now that we acknowledge that, you know, I'm not trying to sweep this under the rug or anything, but why don't we talk a little foosball? Because a lot happened in college. Am I wrong?
No, you are not wrong.
So, look, we're just going to dive right in. You know where I'm going. you know where I'm going with this. Let's go to Boulder. Colorado,
yep.
Nebraska. Now, we talked about this game on the Nerd Zone on Wednesday, and we both said that Nebraska could make this interesting, and it looked like they were. And In the first half, but in the second half, you just saw Colorado completely pull away.
I think that's more, though, that Nebraska shot themselves in the foot more, because you saw Shador not play how he played the first game, which is good. He was still able to be that guy, but the 501 receiving was still so outlandish. But again, we go back to the fact that Colorado still can't run the ball.
Oh, you just took the words right out my mouth, because all I know is if I'm a defender, I'm crowding that box. I'm crowding the line of scrimmage, and I'm not necessarily running all-out blitzes, because you have to be able to run a cover zero to perfect timing. You get what I'm saying?
I wouldn't even do that. I would be running with an extra safety in the back.
Yeah, I would too, because I would do that. And I'm forcing Colorado to run this football. They can't get that push up front. And here's the thing.
Which wouldn't be them loading the box, though. You don't want to load the box on them. You would want
to. Right, I stand corrected on that. But here's the thing with Colorado. They can't get that push up front in the trenches. And you're going to need that when you go into conference play. Yeah, they were able to slide by TCU. And, yeah, you know, they did dominate against Nebraska, because Nebraska, like you said, they just shot themselves in the foot left and right, and any time an opportunity presented itself, they fumbled it away, basically.
So I got the stats up right here.
All right, let's hear it.
Third down conversions, Nebraska was 4 for 13, Colorado was 9 for 18, so roughly 50%.
Which wins football games, because I don't think people realize the importance of converting your third down. I'm going to explain. One, it keeps your defense rested and on the sideline. Two, you get to continue with the football, right?
Yep.
Three, the opposing team you're facing, their defense is gassed and on the sideline and on the field, and, you know, they want a breather, but they can't because there's more pressure on them to stop you. And four, depending on who you're playing, it keeps their offense on the sideline. So converting your third down is normally what contributes to you winning football games.
Yep. All right. So then we have passing yards. Nebraska 119. They were 11 for 22 with 119. And Colorado was 32 of 44 for 96.
Wow. Wow. So you see the disparity right there. I saw a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter joking around. Wow. Matt Rule bought his Carolina playbook with him. Colorado's 2-0. They won more games this year alone than what they did all of last year. Remember, this is a program that Deion inherited that went 1-11.
Yeah, but here's the big thing. There's one thing I'm not saying, though, is the next stat is the rushing yards, though, and I want to get to this. Nebraska ran for 222.
Oh.
On 41 attempts.
Oh.
And Colorado only ran for 58 yards on 33 attempts.
Yeah, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut. So, you know, look, a lot of people, when they talk to me off the microphone and they say, oh, well, you're old school. It's a pass-driven league. Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. It is a very pass-happy, and it very much is a quarterback-driven league. However, running the football in today's game, it still pays dividends because when you can consistently run the football, what does that force the defense to do, Rodney? It forces the defense to put additional guys in a box, bring the safety down, additional linebackers, you crowd that line of scrimmage, and then that just allows you to use your play action to push the football down the field over the top.
Yeah. Or if Shador can run, at least if Shador could run the ball, which I said this to you last week, oh, wait until you hear his running stats this season. It's negative again, by the way.
Let me hear it.
Rushing, Shador Sanders, 11 for minus 30.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, and I bet you, how much you want to bet, Deion was like, man, don't ever do my dance again.
Oh, I will get to that thing with Deion in about 2 seconds, because, boy, they fucked up.
Uh-oh.
I sent this in the group chat, so during, what's it called? During, Deion's press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we missed this. Shador took off his helmet after a play.
Okay.
Deion being the coach said you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Shador then looks at him and Deion says it verbatim. Why? Because now it's personal. I go, oh really? I can't wait till someone takes you out now because you just made it personal because that's bulletin board material.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun playing you play TCU. Congrats. When's the next Big 12 game?
Because
you have Colorado State next.
Yeah, you have Colorado State next. Then they go to
Oregon. Yeah, have fun going to Puddle's house and going into Oregon and Eugene, it's a whole different breed.
It's a whole different atmosphere, and that's one of the toughest places in the country to play. You know that.
Also, then the next week they got to take the reigning, defending Heisman Trophy winner in their
Caleb
house.
Williams and USC. Yeah, because, look, you know, I put it on my Facebook on Saturday. I'm like, man, I cannot wait for that USC-Colorado game. I'm like, more than likely, I'll probably preview that. So there's a shameless plug for in a
couple. Yeah, right?
And then someone commented on the status because someone was like, oh, well, don't forget Oregon. Did I say Oregon? Like, you know, you're not going to come on my page, police me, and tell me what's a post on my page because, you know, that's where we get the game all twisted. But, yeah, I'm excited for those two. I think we're going to see more of who Colorado is in conference play. You see
I really, right now, I look at this team and be like, okay, you're a team that can possibly go bowling, but you're not a team that can take that. You're not a team that's going to be threatening for any Big 12 title games, or what are they in next year? They're in the
Big 12 next year. They're in the Pac-12,
sorry.
Right.
Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, but I'll say this about both the Oregon and USC games. I think they're going to both be really high scoring. But I think you'll see more of a shootout with USC than you will with Oregon because Oregon's playing better defense this year than what they were last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Especially Oregon last night winning the game on a pick six.
Exactly. And you knew Dan Lanning was going to get those boys ready to play. So, okay, Colorado wins that game. What was it, 36-14, right?
Yep,
36-14. They're 2-0, but look, I got to give a little bit of a shout-out to Coach Prime because he has celebrity role at in Boulder. Cameron was there.
Wu-Tang
was there. Wu-Tang was there. Look, I'm even – you can't see it, Ronnie, but I'm even doing the little Wu-Tang
stuff. The W?
Yeah, you already know. Come on, man. Wu-Tang for life. Shout out to the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, there's one Wu-Tang member that wasn't there. He was sitting on he was sitting in Jeth's row waiting for tomorrow, waiting for tonight.
Oh, M-E-T-H-O-D, man. Shout out
Red
to
MF. I was going to say, where's Red? We need Red MF.
Nah, Red wasn't a part of Wu-Tang. It was just meth.
No, it was meth, but I'm saying, well, I mean, let's face it. In the 90s, that's when meth was big, but then all of a sudden Red showed up and that went fucking nuts.
Yeah, they went. They both went ballistic. Stephen A. Smith was there, you know, dressed like he still wears a wire under his clothes. yeah, so the celebs are coming out. Terrell Owens was there. Michael Irvin was there. Michael Irvin was moving like your uncle at the barbecue, you know, after he tastes something. I don't know if you saw that on the sideline, but, yeah, shout out to all the legends that showed up. And, I mean, look, I wouldn't mind going to a game in Boulder. Would you, Ronnie?
No, not at all. I mean, Colorado, listen, they are a team that's going to be good, but they're not – they're just a name right now.
Correct. I agree with you, but look, they're 2-0. They're the talk of college football, and here's the next game we're going to get into because you and I picked this. We did our picks, and we went opposite. I had Texas A&M, and you had Miami.
The U.
You had the U, and the U punched, they punched Texas A&M in the mouth. It was a score of 48-33. Now, coming into this game, Connor Wegman never thrown an interception, right?
Right.
He was a little bit humble in this game, and I think Miami remembers just how poorly they played last year when this game was in College Station in Texas. It was a defensive struggle. I knew it was going to be the complete opposite of that when they met up at the Rock.
If this was in College Station, I think we would be talking about something different.
Oh, definitely. But remember what I said coming into this game? I haven't really been impressed with what Jimbo Fisher has done at Texas A&M because they're paying him a lot of money to elevate that program to the next level. And he hasn't done it. You know, I mean, the best season that Jimbo had in College Station was in 2020 during the pandemic, shortened season. Texas A&M went 9-1, and they did play in the New Year's Six Bowl. They beat the North Carolina Tar Heels in the Orange Bowl. Right?
Yeah.
With Kellen Mond and Devin McSween and all those guys. But now, the one thing I think they miss is who I just mentioned. They don't have that hard running with Devin Achane. Like they used to in years past. And I think they missed his presence. But I'm looking at the numbers right here. Connor Wegman, he went 31-53, 336 yards passing, two touchdowns, and he finally threw his first two interceptions. But his offensive line was absolutely brilliant, right?
Yeah.
He was sacked. He wasn't sacked at all. And when the game started, I don't know how much of this game you saw on Saturday night because I know you went to the Rutgers game.
Yes, I did.
Anna. Texas A&M was so locked in on special teams because they kicked the ball off, they're right down the field, and they punt somebody in the mouth. They block a punt, and I'm like, okay.
Well, A&M was the noon game.
Huh?
A&M was a noon game. I watched all A&M.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and you saw the special teams executing early on, but it just seemed like Miami, once again, made those adjustments. We said this about Florida State and LSU last week, and in the second half, it was a completely different ball game. But also coming into the game, I wanted to see, could Texas A&M's secondary, could they keep up with these Miami receivers. And yesterday, you saw that they couldn't, Ronnie.
Oh, yeah. No, Miami was playing faster, playing stronger, and playing a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm looking at Tyler Van Dyke's numbers right here. He went 21 of 30, 374 yards, averaged almost 18 yards per pass attempt. And he threw not one, not two, not three, not four, but five touchdowns. Look, we're talking about Miami, so I decided to go Miami Brown here, okay? Look, it was only fitting. And he was sacked two times, but once again, we talk about this, and just looking at the overall numbers, right? Miami really couldn't run the football. Their leading rusher was, he only had 50 yards rushing. And you want to talk about bad rushing numbers from a quarterback. You ready for Tyler Van Dyke's rushing numbers?
What?
Two carries, negative 12 yards. That's terrible.
Yeah, you know what the difference is, though?
What's that?
Is that when it came down to him having the run, he knew when to tuck it, take it and drop. Shador was scrambling most of the game, too.
Yeah, but this is an interesting game. I mean, this is one of those upsets that some people saw coming, like you, and others didn't see coming. Miami, they were just a better team, and Mario Cristobal, he just outcoached Jimbo Fisher, and there was a lot of money featured in this game because Jimbo and Mario are two of the highest-paid coaches in college football, Ronnie.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, A&M came in, knew what they needed to do, and it showed.
Yeah, yeah, it really did. It really did. And I also saw another question I was wondering was, could Texas A&M handle the depth of Miami's defensive line, because Miami has a lot of talent on that defensive line. Look, we said it last week. The game as a whole is more intriguing and more invigorating when the legendary teams are good. So I hope Miami can turn this around because they've had some mediocre teams the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when we had our little production meeting, you wanted to bring something up about Ohio State. The floor is yours, my good man.
Oh, I think this team is a paper tiger if I've ever seen one.
Why do you say that?
Now, explain what a paper tiger means. False champ. I do not think they are in any way, shape, or form a team that should be competing for the Big Ten, nor the national title. As much as everyone's like, oh, well, they won their games. I'm going to take it from somebody we used to know. They have a bunch of cupcakes. And, yes, their first two games, they play Indiana. Everyone's like, oh, well, they play Indiana. Indiana plays them hard every year in Indiana. Right. But when you're the fourth team in the nation, you should not be winning by only 20. Okay, maybe you could say the clock, the first thing, the clock is this, the clock is that. Yada, yada. Okay, whatever. Then Youngstown State comes in, and you only put up 35. And you give up a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. If that's C.J. Stroud and company from the last
year. They're putting 70.
They're putting 70.
That's what I mean. I'm not liking what this team is. And I will say it now. If this ends up being what I think it might be, now I'm not going to sit here and tell you that a team like Rutgers is going to go undefeated through because they have to beat Michigan. They beat Michigan.
Right.
But if a one-loss Rutgers team runs this table and comes down to the beginning of November and it's Rutgers, Ohio State, guess what's showing up in fucking Jersey? College game day.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Oh, yeah, and me. Oh, you bet your ass, because I'm watching this, and I honestly think a team like Rutgers can beat Ohio State.
What about Notre Dame?
That's the game after Western Kentucky. Bro, Notre Dame in South Bend can run them out the damn stadium.
Look, what do I always say that teams unfortunately have a tendency to do? Because we're going to talk about that in the NFL, with the NFL in a couple minutes when we get to that segment. Teams have a tendency to do what? Overlook who's in front of them and look ahead. And I always say, I say it on the air. You've heard me say it on the Nerd Zone. You probably heard me say it on the Prime, College Football Showdown, and some of the writings on the site, which is the dailyblitz.blog. I thought I'd just throw in that shameless plug right there. It doesn't matter about the next opponent. Focus on what's in front of you right then and there, because whether you win, whether you lose, or whether you tie the game, that opponent that you're looking ahead to is still going to be there at the end of the day. And a lot of teams, unfortunately, have a tendency to just overlook who's in front of them. So who does Ohio State play next?
Western Kentucky, the Hilltop.
I'm not going to say necessarily a trap game, but this could be a team that Ohio State, unfortunately, looks over. And then, again, they always play those non-conference games early on. I think the toughest game that I've seen Ohio State play in the last few years early on was the one against Oregon at the Shoe in 2021, when Oregon went in there and beat them?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, I know you had to get that ran out, but here's where I want to go next.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Game of the day. College game day was there. Desmond Howard in his chair. I think a lot of you know what I'm talking about when I say that. And Texas, Alabama. Now, remember, these two played each other last year in Austin. And Quinn Ewers was dicing apart this Alabama secondary. And then what happens? He gets hurt. Hudson Card comes in. Can't really get the job done. Can't consistently move the football down the field like Quinn was. And Texas did everything correctly in that game except for one thing. They gave Bryce Young way too much time. Couldn't sack him. Alabama wins that game by a score of 20-19. I remember previewing that last year, and I think I had Alabama blowing Texas out, Ronnie. You know, you read everything that I write.
Yeah.
So coming into the game yesterday, on Saturday, I previewed that one, and I'll say this about Alabama. They don't scare me like they have in years past, right? Like, you look at all those title-winning teams under Nick Saban, and all of them have had a common denominator. They've had a quarterback that somewhat scares you. They had a power running game, serviceable tight end over the middle. As of late, they've had a lot of firepower and star power at wide receiver, right? And they've always had a punishing defense along with consistent secondary play. The secondary hasn't been great. They missed Will Anderson, but Dallas Turner, I think, he's going to have big shoes to fill, but I think he could be pretty good for this Alabama defense. I think he's going to probably be their best player.
Yeah, I can see that.
But the Alabama offense just doesn't scare me like it used to. And the difference in this year's game was Quinn Ewers actually played, because he was flinging that ball all over the field. And Texas came into this game with one of the elite groups of wide receivers in the country, Xavier Worthy, and then I can't forget Jatavion Sanders. He's a tight end who they use in so many different capacities. They'll get him the ball on tight end screens. They'll line him up wide. And this kid's about 6'6 or 6'7, if I'm not mistaken. And they just find different ways to get him the ball. And it just seemed like Alabama had no answer for him. Texas gets that big win. They win 34-24. I'm looking at the numbers right here. I have them written down. Just looking at everything. So let's start with the Texas side, right, Ronnie?
Yeah.
Quinn Ewers, 24-38, 349 yards, 3 touchdowns. But here's the most impressive stat. Guess how many times he was sacked?
Was it none?
None. So Texas did a good job of being bullies up front. So in other words, ladies and gentlemen, and Ronnie, Texas beat Alabama at their own game. They punched Alabama in the mouth, because that's what Alabama is used to doing. They're used to establishing the physicality and the tempo of the game in their favor. Looking at their receiving core right here, Tavian Sanders was their leading receiver. 5 receptions, a buck 14, averaged almost 23 yards per catch and no touchdowns. Adonis Mitchell, 3 receptions, 78 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's a transfer from Georgia. I think I said his name right. Let me see, because I don't want to mess names up, because that's not what we do here at Monday Evening Quarterback. It's Adonai Mitchell. Or Aiden.
He
previously played for Georgia. So he was on Georgia's title-winning teams from 2021 and 2022, right? And he's going to be a threat in this offense. He's 6'4", 196, and he can take the top off his own because he was doing that consistently last night. I don't know how I feel about Jalen Milroe, Ronnie. Looking at his numbers right here, he was 14 of 27, 245 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and he was sacked 5 times. And also, when I think of Alabama, like I just said, they always have that power running game, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Jace McClellan can do that because he only ran the ball 12 times for 45 yards, 3.8 yards a carry, no touchdowns. And then guess who your second leading rusher was?
Milroe.
15 carries, 44 yards, and no touchdowns. But I don't know, man. I think the tide, no pun intended, is changing because Alabama just doesn't – I don't fear them anymore like I used to. I don't know how you feel, but you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know much really with Texas. I know they got, like, yours, I still, as much as it is. Bama, we had all coming in, having questions.
Right.
We all had questions coming in. But now it seems like Bama's kind of fallen out of what people have thought about them.
Right.
I mean, now you're going to have to play Tennessee 2-0. You're going to have to play LSU, who's 1-1. You're going to have to play A&M, that's 1-1, in College Station.
Which is a tough – and Texas A&M always gives them a run for their money. Don't be surprised if Texas A&M actually beats them.
You're going to have to play at home a Lane Kiffin – pissed off Lane Kiffin
Old Miss. And then don't forget, you got to play LSU and Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
And remember,
and
Brian beat them last year.
And then you also have to play a 2-0 Auburn and a 2-0 Kentucky in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to play Arkansas, that's a rival. That's an old school rival game.
Right. So
you can see that. I can see them dropping 4 games.
So out of all of that, how many games do you see them winning realistically the rest of the season? Because now, as I always say, everything almost becomes a playoff game for them. You lose another game, you're out the playoff picture pretty much.
Oh, I don't have them. They're not going to the playoffs.
I have them predicted to make the playoffs, and I might have to agree with you, my friend.
I got them going 8-4.
Wow. Oh, wow.
I have them losing to Arkansas. I have them losing to A&M. And then I have them losing to, I mean, listen, you throw the record book out of everything. They got to go to O'Hare.
Right.
Or the Iron Bowl. You can
throw
everything out there because Auburn right now is 2-0. And they beat a team in Cal and they flew all the way to California to beat Cal. By a decent amount. So, yeah, I think that game, there's going to be a lot of mix in the top of the West.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, Alabama, I'm concerned. And those are words I think I'd never say. Alabama just got punched in the mouth. And you got anything else you want to add for college football, Ronnie?
College, not, I mean, so like you said earlier, I was at the Rutgers game, so I missed a lot of the 7 o'clock games.
Okay.
But I can say without a shadow of a doubt, Temple might be one of the worst teams I've ever watched live.
It was that bad, huh?
I've never seen a team with a defense that's supposed to be, oh my God, the defense for Temple is going to be so good this year. Be so predictable.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, because I didn't see much of the Temple game yesterday. But to wrap up what we just discussed in college football, I always give out a game ball, and I'm giving one out right now. I'm giving it to Quinn Ewers of the Texas Longhorns, 24-38, 349 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, and he was not sacked. And he made some dime passes against this Alabama secondary. But to go into Tuscaloosa and get a win, that's huge. That's all we have for college football today. We're going to go to the phone lines. Then we're going to talk about the NFL and what caught our eye in week one. Then we're going to give you a little bit more of a preview of a huge Monday night football game tonight. I think you guys may have heard. A future Hall of Famer makes his debut with the New York Jets tonight. So we're going to go to the phone lines right now. Then we're going to pay some bills. This is Monday Evening Quarterback on Spotify, YouTube, Twitch, Blog Talk Radio, and the Nerdport Network. I'm Christian Simpson, and this is hashtag Daily Blitz Radio. Man, football season is here. College just started the other day. The NFL starts on Thursday. And now I'm doing one of my favorite things on Monday Evening Quarterback. I love when people love to come on MEQ and talk some football with me. And I have a caller on the line right now. Caller, you're on with the analyst on Monday Evening Quarterback. What's on your mind?
All right,
so who am I talking with first? Because remember, man, this is
radio. This is
Mike. Mike, what's going on?
Mike, long-time follower, first-time caller.
Man, glad to have you, and long-time follower at that. Look, better later than never. Talk to me. What's on your mind football-wise?
Man, I'll tell you what's on my mind. Number one is getting this Joe Burrow deal signed in Cincinnati. That'll be number one for me.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'll tell you this. I think he's the second-best quarterback in football. I think he's the best quarterback in football, not named Patrick. What he's done for this organization, and just closely following him when he was in college to now, it's the same guy. You know, I remember that year when he won the Heisman for LSU, right? And it just seemed like every single week he was carving defenses up left and right. You're seeing the same thing in the NFL. He's carving defenses up left and right. And it helps that he has his running mate with him in Jamar Chase. And that was a pretty good tandem in college, and they're great now in the NFL. Mike, I'm going to tell you this, and you're the Bengal fan, so you correct me if I'm wrong here. Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, they kind of remind me a little bit of Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison. They just have that chemistry like Peyton and Marvin did. And I know Peyton's a Hall of Famer.
I like that comparison.
Yeah, I know Marvin's a Hall of Famer. But, I just see Joe knows he can get the ball to Jamar at any time, and Jamar always says, okay, let me position myself so I can make a play on the ball because I know Joe is going to look my way.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see this year. I think it was a little new for him last year being double covered on every play, so it's going to be crucial for the Bengals to keep. I don't know if it's going to be able to happen, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, but when a guy is getting double teamed like that, this is when they have to improvise and kind of find different ways to get the ball. So I could see them incorporating Jamar on a lot of short, quick passes, a lot of screens, maybe stuff going over the middle, because he reminds me a lot of Odell. I think he's a more explosive Odell Beckham, and I'm not just saying that because they're both LSU alumni, but I just see the way he's able to break and how he's able to free himself and how he's able to kind of just move around in the open field. He's so much fun to watch. All right, Mike, I think there you go.
It reminds me of a young T.O. I remember watching T.O. take screen passes where he would just juke that first quarter and
yeah, and Odell did the same thing, you know, during his Giants days and sometimes during
Maybe it's just me, but I'll just try not to keep him related to Odell because I'm hoping we don't get the same kind of injury.
Nah, I don't think so. I think Jamar is a little bit I think he has better leadership around him than Odell ever did.
So, I 100% agree
right.
with that.
Now, Mike,
but we did see him get hurt last year.
Yeah, we did. We did.
Second year, We did.
And I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good for him to be back in the NFL because I know, you know, he's playing in the division that you're a fan of, the AFC North. He just signed with the Baltimore Ravens. So let me ask you this,
Mike. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the AFC North? Do you get the best division of football this year?
It's up there because I could see three teams making the playoffs this year. I'll tell you this. I have Cincinnati winning the AFC North. I think they're the best team in that division. I think they just have the best core. Watch out for the Steelers, though. Like, Mike Tomlin, to me, is the Eric Spoelstra of the NFL. You put whatever you have around.
Wins, man. Obviously, I hate the Steelers as a code of being a Bengals fan. But
absolutely.
I got nothing against Mike Tomlin. He seems like just a great dude.
He's a guy that you want to play.
Just wins, man. Sometimes you just win. You get a coach that just knows how to coach and is going to get you no matter what team you put on the field.
Exactly. And then with Baltimore, I'm looking, can they stay healthy? Because Baltimore had a tough time keeping guys on the field, but you look at it and you just say, hey, our teammate almost died on the field. You look at it and you just say, hey, our teammate almost died on the field. We just can't turn the switch on and go back to football. You get what I'm saying?
I get that. I think, let's be clear. First of all, I think that game that happened in, I think was about to be an absolute rundown.
I think so, too.
The Buffalo Bills, and I think if that injury doesn't happen, I think it was clear very early on how that game was going to go.
Yeah, and then look at what we saw in the playoffs. Like, man,
and then I think, and that's why I was so glad that we got to play them again in the playoffs because I just doubled down on that. You know, it was
absolutely.
Like, well, we're playing you at your home stadium now and then run you by three touchdowns.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, I ask you my question, do you have anything else for me football-wise?
Who do you see making the big turnaround this year? Who's going to? Because there's always that one team that nobody sees coming that makes a giant leap.
I'm going to say the Denver Broncos. Now, I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs necessarily, but I think they're going to be a much more improved team. I just saw a group that didn't want to play for Nathaniel Hackett last year, and most importantly, they were using Russell Wilson the wrong way. He's not a pocket guy. Look at all those years he was in Seattle. He's making things happen with his feet.
Yeah, he's a bootleg guy.
Yeah, he's extending plays, and they were trying to keep him in the pocket. Now you bring in Sean Payton. And Sean, look at what Sean Payton did with Drew Brees. When Drew Brees gets that Hall of Fame jacket in a couple of years from now, it's going to be because of Sean Payton.
They have similar play styles, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson.
They do. So I'm going to say –
Brees
used to
run that bootleg.
Yep.
That bootleg a lot. They used to run that a lot.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the Denver Broncos to ask your question. Now, Mike, this is a two-parter for you. I end every phone call by always asking people what their favorite thing is about the Daily Blitz. So now I present that question to you. What's your favorite thing about the Daily Blitz?
I like the articles you write, man. I like your you break it down well. I especially love that every time that there's been a big game, I don't know that I've ever seen you pick against the Bengals, so I tend to always like the articles. Going back all the way to the Super Bowl, I mean, the other year, I know you picked them as well, so I enjoy it, man. I think your analytics, I think the way you break it down, I think you see some things that are in clear sight, but that I wouldn't even necessarily thought of, because I never would have picked the Denver Broncos right there, but I like that pick, actually.
Man, I appreciate
it.
I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Now, I have another question for you, and I'm asking all my phone callers this because everybody's going to be listening to this. Can I get a Super Bowl prediction from you and who you have winning the game?
Well, you know who I got to pick on the AFC side.
Of course.
I think the only thing we've been missing the last 2 years from having two rings is an offensive line. I think the Orlando Brown signing was huge. I think not letting go of any of the other guys, Earl Collins and everybody else, is going to give them depth for when people get hurt inevitably.
Right, right.
So I don't think we'll be just a ragtag offensive line. And I just don't think there's a defense in the league that can stop Joe Burrow when he's got an offensive line. So
okay.
I'm taking the Bengals. On the NFC side, I'm a little more torn because I want to take the Niners. But I just think it's a quarterback league. I think it's a quarterback-driven league. I think you've got to have a quarterback. And to keep it, it's not going to be super interesting, but I really like the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the NFC is very weak. I don't think there's more than three legitimate contenders in the NFC.
Agreed. I think
Philly only got better. I think they got a better running back.
Yep.
I think they kept all their offensive line pieces. Another year with Hurts in that system, I think is going to be real interesting. And I think it's going to be Philly.
Okay, so you're calling a Cincinnati Bengals Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl in Las Vegas in February. Let's see if it happens, Mike. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I always like to say the doors of MEQ are always open. So let me know when you want to come back and we'll chop it up and talk more football, okay?
Hell yeah, man. We'll catch up in mid-season sometime.
Oh, and by the way, Mike is also a North Carolina Tar Heels fan. So it's always a great day to be a Tar Heel, baby.
Let's go, baby. We're coming back next.
You all right. My man. Make sure I honor September 11th in some type of way, shape, or form. That's Ground Zero by the diplomats Cameron, Joel Santana, Jim Jones here on Monday Evening Quarterback, and welcome back. Man, I love my phone callers back here with Ronnie Koontz on Spotify, YouTube, Twitch, Blog Talk Radio, and the Nerdport Network. And remember, this episode once again is sponsored by the amazing folks at Homage. Once again, the link will be posted when I post the show on the website later tonight. Ronnie, week one of the NFL, it's coming to an end tonight. It ends in a big way, but let's talk about the first game that you and I and everybody else saw. That's the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs, because the Lions punched the Chiefs in the mouth.
So is it really the Lions punched the Chiefs in the mouth? It's Kadarius Toney couldn't catch a damn pass.
I mean, you're not wrong, but the Lions had adjustments.
With cinder block hands on the damn sidelines.
Yeah, yeah. You know what a saber candy is, right?
Skittles.
Butterfingers.
Butterfingers. Yeah. Yeah, he needed to take a chip from the replacements, get that stick him.
Yeah, or something. But, nah, man, the Lions really showed the world, look, pay attention to us. And they win that game by a score of 21-20. You know, I think everybody, myself included, had the Kansas City Chiefs winning that game. Defending champs, and he had the best quarterback in the league, right? And Patrick Mahomes. But I'm looking at the numbers right here for Jared Goff. He looked good in this game. 22 of 35, 253 yards passing, and one touchdown passing. He was sacked only one time, which leads me to my next. The Chiefs ain't winning nothing without Chris Jones.
No, that was proven because they ran that ball up the gut the entire time.
And you noticed the only time the Chiefs could get home to the quarterback was when they blitzed. And you can't blitz too much because the team's going to adjust on that. They blitzed, and, yeah, just looking at it, I'm going to go look at Mahomes' numbers now. He was 21 of 39, 226 yards, two touchdowns, and he did throw that interception. But you cannot blame that interception on him because that ball literally ricocheted off of Kadarius Toney's hands. It goes into the hands of Brian Branch, who would have been a huge help yesterday in Tuscaloosa. I mean, on Saturday in Tuscaloosa, and takes it back to the house for a pick six. Guess who the leading rusher was for the
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, so dare I say it, I think the Chiefs depend a little too much on number 15. Because when one aspect of your game isn't working, turn to another aspect, which is running.
Well, the next question I have is this doesn't have the breakdown of it. How much of that was broken plays? How much of that was design runs?
Yeah, but a lot of whenever you see Mahomes run, it's usually because the play broke down and the team didn't account for him in man coverage, right? But you can get that push up front. The Chiefs have invested heavily on that offensive line. And for most of the games, Juwan Taylor, he played good, but he played well. Because my old English teacher would be ticked off hearing that. He played well. However, he was lined up out of sync a little bit. But they called him for a false start toward the end of the game, and I'm like, look, he's been moving and jittering around all game. Why are you just calling it now? You get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But I think the biggest takeaway, you saw it, they really miss Travis Kelce. Every quarterback has a safety valve, right? Joe Burrow has Jamar Chase, who we're going to talk about very shortly. Tom Brady had Gronk. And look at the difference with Brady last year in not having Gronk compared to having him for, 8 or 9 years. Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison. Like, every great quarterback has that safety valve that they could turn to. And he really missed him. Now, do you think he plays next week? On this upcoming Sunday against the Jacksonville Jaguars?
That's a great question. I probably does. He probably does play.
And you're going to see a difference. But I'm still concerned about the Chiefs' defense because they can't get home to the quarterback unless they blitz. And that's Steve Spagnuolo's specialty is the pass rush. You saw what he did with the Giants when they won those Super Bowls in 2007 and 2011 to the New England Patriots. He dialed up consistent amounts of pressure. Remember, we called it the NASCAR pass rush. And
they were able
to get home, plain and simple. But I just saw the lack of effort and the lack of a pass rush from the Chiefs on Thursday night. Chiefs start 0-1, and Patrick Mahomes has been pretty magical in the month of September. This is only the third game he's lost in September since taking over as the starting quarterback for the Chiefs. Anything else you want to add to this Lions and Chiefs game?
No, I don't think there's anything I need to add to the Lions and Chiefs games. It was pretty self-explanatory on that.
Okay, so now I ask you, what are some things that caught your eye in week one from yesterday's games that happened on Sunday?
The half-billion-dollar man really made his effective for the 49ers.
Nick Bosa?
Yep.
Yeah. I thought they played the best defense out of anybody I saw, along with another team that I'm going to mention right after this. But, man, that was pure domination by the San Francisco 49ers. And all my years of watching the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin teams, I've never seen a Coach Mike team that undisciplined.
Lost.
Missing tackles. Getting beat up at the line of scrimmage, turning the ball over, just not being physical. They look soft. Call it the soft curtain, not the steel curtain. Yeah, the 49ers just went into Pittsburgh and punched them in the mouth. I mean, I think the 49ers are trying to establish themselves. Like, hey, you know, we're here too. We've been the three out of the last four AFC championship games, and Brock Purdy looked good. I think everybody was hoping that Brock would show a little bit of rust, but he looked good. 19 to 29, 220 yards passing, two touchdowns, no picks, and he was sacked three times. Everybody knows who the difference maker is for this offense. It's CMC, and he just looks like a completely different guy now.
22 for 152 and a touchdown. That's just his rushing.
Yeah, and then Brandon Ayuk was the leading receiver, eight receptions, 129 yards, two touchdowns. Remember what I said. Brandon is their best pure wide receiver because he can stretch the field, he can make catches in traffic, and he's their best red zone threat next to George Kittle. And then the defense, pretty much picking up where they left off from last year. They were the best defense in the league, and I won't be surprised if they regain that title again. They were able to make Kenny Pickett throw the ball 46 times. They forced two interceptions, and they sacked them five times, and the Steelers couldn't rush the football. But then again, it's tough to rush the football on the San Francisco defense, and you see the difference that Nick Bosa makes. I'm so glad they paid him. This 49ers team is going to be fun to watch this year, Ronnie.
Yeah, I'll give you one more that caught my eye.
And then I'll give you one. There are two more that caught my eye.
Baker Mayfield.
That was one I was just about to point out. So what about Baker? Let's hear it.
The fact that he went in with pretty much with everything to lose and nothing to gain and went 21 for 34 for 175 with two touchdowns and no picks.
You know what I think it was, too? I think Minnesota overlooked Tampa Bay. It, unfortunately, teams have a tendency to do that. I think we saw a Minnesota team say, hey, we're a hell of a lot better than them. All we have to do is show up. It doesn't work that way.
Well, the other thing that doesn't help is Cousins passing for 44 for 328, but then they only ran for 41 yards on 17 attempts.
But also, look at it this way. Tampa's been one of the best teams these last 2 years when it comes to stopping the run, and they have the best run stopper in the league, the big man in the middle, Vita Vea.
Yeah, why the Jets couldn't pay him, I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I get it. You know, he does it old school. He doesn't.
Then again, though, nowadays, oh, yeah, we don't need to worry about that. We'll get into the Jets.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into the Jets in a couple minutes before we close out the show. But... yeah, Tampa Bay went in there with that us-against-the-world mentality because I think everybody penciled Tampa Bay to lose this game, man.
We all did. Even on the Nerds, we did our picks. We all picked Minnesota because it's Kirk Cousins at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, but just looking at it right here, Tampa won that game yesterday by a score of 20-17. Tampa really couldn't run the ball either. I don't know if you knew this, but did you know that Brian Flores, the former Miami head coach, he's now the defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings. And
yeah,
you saw the impact compared to last year. They were a lot better in coverage for the most part, and they were able to stop the run primarily. And did they get after Baker? Yeah, and they got one sack of Baker Mayfield. But that doggone Mike Evans, man, it doesn't really matter who's throwing him the football. He's going to make plays, and it's almost as if he's underrated, but then again, he's not, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
He amazes me, and the fact that Tampa Bay isn't going to extend him, it really just grinds my gears, and, you know, he's going to be sought out in the offseason during free agency, because I know one team that could have used him on Thursday night, Kansas City.
Yeah.
Could you just imagine him in that offense with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce?
Yo, yeah, right? And I would say... go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, just imagine. But yeah, I'm with you. That was one I was going to say that caught my eye. But you know what else caught my eye yesterday, Ronnie? Just watching
what?
Some week one game.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Where am I going?
Cleveland.
Uh-huh. And who called Cleveland to upset Cincinnati?
Yeah. Well, I don't think we were expecting fucking 22 inches of fucking rain either.
Okay. Oh, so we blaming Mother Nature now. That's what we doing?
I mean, listen, a hurricane was passing through the Northeast. I don't
so
think
that's
we were
what we're doing right now. We're blaming Mother Nature.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati got beat.
You know,
there's no other way to say it. Cincinnati got whooped.
You know what it is? It seems like the Bengals always get up for the Steelers, no matter where the game is, whether it's at Heinz, because I don't call the Steelers Stadium what they call it now. That's still Heinz to me.
No, just like the Carrier Dome is going to be the Carrier Dome for Syracuse.
Exactly. They always seem to play the Baltimore Ravens tough, right? Always seem to play the Ravens tough. But Cleveland is that one team that they always play down to. And it's almost reminiscent of the 49ers always punching the Los Angeles Rams in the mouth. Because that's exactly what the Bengals do, and that's exactly what the Browns did yesterday to the Cincinnati Bengals. Looking at the numbers right here, first the score was 24-3. Joe Burrow, guys, this guy just signed a contract extension on what, Thursday or Friday?
Friday.
The highest paid player in NFL history, right? 14-31, 82 yards. And he was sacked two times, which isn't bad because normally Joe Burrow sacked about 6 or 7 times. But Cincinnati's had offensive line issues these last couple of years. And you remember what I told you last season on the Nerd Zone? If Cincinnati doesn't correct these offensive line issues and keep Joe Burrow on his feet, this is another Andrew Luck walking.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, if you want to play narrative, Cincinnati has Joe Burrow has not beat Cincinnati in his entire career.
No, he beat him last year in
in Cleveland. He never beat him in Cleveland. He never beat him in Cleveland.
It was just something about that matchup that just said, okay, let me go with the upset. Let me start off with a bang.
So I was gonna say, did it last year? Wasn't that game that was Halloween, right? That was the Monday night Halloween game, I think.
Yeah,
was in Cleveland last year.
Yeah, but Jamar Chase wasn't playing. I mean,
no,
he played today.
but just like Chris Collinsworth, there always has to be an asterisk because you know without Kelce or Jones, that's the only reason Detroit beat Kansas City.
Oh yeah, Joe Mixon ran the ball 13 times for 56 yards. That's not going to cut it. And Jamar Chase was held in check. 9 targets. He caught 5 passes for 39 yards and no touchdowns. And looking on the Browns side of things, they didn't really need Deshaun Watson to take this game over.
Oh, and he did, though.
154 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. He was sacked 3 times. But everybody knows who this Cleveland offense travels through. Nick Chubb, 18 carries, a buck 06, 106 yards. And no touchdowns, but the Bengals couldn't stop the run. And it was just something that just told me, hey, look, take Cleveland because they always punch the Bengals in the mouth. And this kind of surprised me because the Bengals have dominated this division the last 2 years, and they've been in the last 2 AFC championship games. But this is a sour start to begin the season.
I'll say this, last thing on this, not even this for the NFL, in my opinion, welcome back to the league, Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic last night, and it seemed like he and Trevor have been in the lab working because just some of the passes that Trevor threw, you talk about threading the needle and overthrowing your wide receiver to the point where only he can make a play on the football. That's exactly what we saw.
8 catches, 101, and a touchdown.
Yeah, did you see that touchdown that he caught? He couldn't have been more wide open.
No.
And I'm just sitting here, and I'm watching that game yesterday, and I'm just saying to myself, look, who's guarding him? Was it man or was it zone? I think the Colts are playing zone.
Yeah, the Colts really didn't seem – the Colts were, like, not really showing up, it looked like, until, like, second quarter. But I mean, hey, I called it, too, on Wednesday. I have Trevor Lawrence as my MVP.
Okay.
And if he plays – if he has games like he played today or Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gonna be definitely a finalist.
I can see it, but Jacksonville's gonna be fun to watch, especially with the Calvin Ridley element, and don't forget Travis Etienne. He's their Alvin Kamara. You know, he reminds me a lot of him. I'm trying to think, anything else to look at that caught my eye yesterday in week one? The Saints. Let's talk about the Saints and the Tennessee Titans. That game was too close for my liking. And now you see why I always say I don't trust Ryan Tannehill, right? Because he's just not that guy that's going to put you over the top. Must look at these numbers right here. 16 of 34, 198 yards passing, no touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Derrick Henry was kept in check for most of this game. 15 carries, 63 yards. Did you see that stiff arm?
Bouncing like a basketball.
Listen, I've been saying it for years. Cole Johnson, better known as Coach, can agree with me when I say this. Tackle him low. Stop trying to tackle him high. Or else you're going to end up on a stiff arm poster. Plain and simple. It took a minute for Derek Carr to really get in sync yesterday. You know, he just kind of looked out of place. It looked like he was trying to force some things a little bit. Saints hadn't really been able to run the football, but that's due to Tennessee playing great defense and stopping the run because Mike Vrabel was always in charge of building up great run defenses. And you saw it during his playing days with the New England Patriots. The Saints are 1-0, and they win this game by a score of 16-15. So it was really a defensive struggle. But I'll say this, the Titans are screwed because if Derrick Henry goes out, which we know he's injury prone now, right? If he goes out any point of time in this game, the passing attack is not going to make it happen, right? Yeah, that's all I really have to say. Ronnie, before we end the show, should we preview one final game?
Yes. Also, I just want to say something, too. It looks like for the Colts,
mm-hmm.
Richardson was getting hurt. There's no news about if he's going to play, but he did not come back for the final minute of the game when they were trying to have the last drive. So I don't know what's happened to him, but he looked like he had a lower leg injury. We'll know more on Wednesday, and
yes,
we'll report more of it on Wednesday. So
yes, we will. That's just a rookie mistake. Yeah, I get he's 6'4". He's a little over 250 pounds, and he feels he can lower that shoulder. But quarterbacks have the edge, and they need to learn how to slide.
It wasn't even that. He, it looks like he got wrapped around his leg.
Uh-huh.
And he was holding his leg. It was not a shoulder or anything like that. It was a lower leg injury.
And speaking of injuries and lower leg injuries, you heard about J.K. Dobbins, right?
Ankle, right?
They're saying he tore his Achilles.
Ugh.
That's tough. Because this guy has really had trouble staying on the field. And when he's healthy, he's a difference maker for this Baltimore offense. Yeah, Baltimore was able to roll yesterday against Houston. Tough day at the office for C.J. Stroud. But, yeah, they're saying J.K. potentially tore his Achilles. And I like J.K. Dobbins.
So do I. And, boy, did John
him during his Ohio State days, you remember what Gus Johnson would always say? J.K. all day, baby.
Yeah, and then Bijan being Bijan.
Oh, man, Bijan's the man.
He's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, he looked good. And I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of analysts. I haven't done this. But I've seen a lot of analysts compare him to LaDainian Tomlinson. Do you see any of that in him?
No, I see more Derrick Henry in the guy because he has lower shoulder.
I don't know.
Not bowling. No. He's more agile, but I see him more of that lower his shoulder and not and lower the boom on somebody than trying to duck and dodge.
Right. Okay. All right, Ronnie. So before we wrap this show up and call it a show for episode 2 for Spotify, let's preview one more final game because I know we have a lot to say about this one. It is Monday Night Football, and this is a big one. I think this is a tone setter in the AFC. The Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets, and Aaron Rodgers is making his New York Jets debut. Another legendary quarterback starting and more than likely going to end his career with this team. We saw this in 2012 with Peyton Manning, or we could even go back. We saw this with Brett Favre.
The difference is he didn't want to be – Favre didn't want to be a Jet.
No, he didn't. He wanted to be a Viking.
Viking, and the fact that that was a stepping – this was a stepping stone for him.
Right. When I look at this game, I look at Buffalo. They're the best team in the AFC East, and they have the potential to really be a contender. I look at Josh Allen. When he's healthy, he puts this offense over the top. He's a dual-threat quarterback. He can throw it from the pocket. He can move the pocket, and he can run it, although I think he runs it a little too much, and that's the problem I have with Buffalo. They depend on him to do a little too much, and your quarterback should not be your leading rusher. We say this all the time, right? Defensively, Buffalo has one of the best units, and they're going to be without Von Miller for the first 4 games, but he comes back when he has to because Buffalo, they have some heavy hitters that they have to play.
And it looks like Micah Hyde is out.
Oh, that's tough. But the Bills signed.
Hold on, while you're talking about that, I'll pull up the
Bills. The Bills signed Leonard Floyd, and you have Greg Rousseau, who's probably the Bills' best defensive player. And Matt Milano is taking over for Tremaine Edmonds, right? When I look at the Jets, like I said in the preview when I released it on Friday, everything is there. Everything was there for the Jets last year. I think they started 4-2, if I'm not mistaken. They were running the football. They were playing great defense. Quinnen Williams was looking like a defensive player of the year candidate in the beginning. And then everything just kind of went downhill with the inconsistent quarterback play. But now they fixed that. And you get a Hall of Famer and Aaron Rodgers. And just hearing a lot of his Jets teammates rave about him. He's all about timing. That's what Mecole Hardman said. I think the key for Buffalo coming into this game tonight, Buffalo must, they got to set the tone early on. You remember what Buffalo did to the Rams last year in week 1 on that Thursday night?
Yeah.
That's what Buffalo needs to do tonight. Set the tone and say, hey, look, we play down to them. Everybody's going to say we're not a threat. But Buffalo needs to start quickly. They got to start quickly. The matchup I'm looking forward to in this game, I'm looking forward to seeing Sauce line up against Stephon Diggs because he kept him in check. Well, somebody on Twitter tried to tell me he never guarded him, so I didn't know what I was talking about. So this is for you, lady. But I don't even know you, and I'm talking about you.
I don't know you.
I think this is going to be a close game. I like Buffalo here. I like Buffalo tonight. I think I have Buffalo winning this game 26-21. I have some issues with the Jets' offensive line, and that just always seems to be the problem. If that Jets' offensive line can hold up, the Jets can win this game.
Well, I think the fact that Becton is going to play, that's no ifs, ands, or buts. He went off the other day being sick. But he's going to play. Right now he's questionable. Daquan Brown is questionable, the other tackle, but he's going to play. And they're saying Breece Hall is now listed as questionable. The running back's expected to play. They're saying his knee, but, I mean, they're just putting that on there because he's coming off of a freaking ACL injury.
Yeah. So I can't wait to see the Dalvin Cook aspect. I have the Buffalo Bills winning this game 26-21. Who do you have winning tonight, Ronnie?
I mean, that's kind of a homer question there, but I have the Jets winning 21-24.
Okay.
I think it's the fact that you're going into it, and this is what I've been hearing from everyone. Everyone has been solely putting down the Jets because they still think it's the team from last year.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, well, Rodgers. I go, you guys, people do not understand that. Jet fans that are actually looking at this do not give a rat's ass that Rodgers is here. Yeah, great. Rodgers is here. That's the great thing. We have a Hall of Fame quarterback. We're not looking for him to win us games. We are looking for him not to lose us games.
Right, exactly. And he's not going to be MVP Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't have to.
Listen, if he can be that, great. We don't want that. We don't need that. If he gets that to us, perfect. That's a plus.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we just preview Monday night football here on Monday evening, quarterback. I can't wait to watch this game and break it down with you tonight. We actually need to go get ready because I think we're going to be doing some streaming for this game, Ronnie.
Yeah, I would believe so. I think so too.
But now we're gonna bring this thing on home, man. This has been another fun episode of Monday Evening Quarterback. I hope you guys enjoy listening to this episode just as much as we have fun recording this episode. Keep up with us on social media and the website, which is thedailyblitz.blog. Enter your email address and become a subscriber today. Follow us on Twitter or on X or whatever you're calling it today. @DailyBlitz_61. Follow us on Instagram, which is @TheDailyBlitz_61. Keep up with me through the airwaves Monday Evening Quarterback every Monday night. There's that. Then right after on Mondays and Tuesdays, you can catch me on The Prime, on Prime Sports World with David On Point, TJ Hopkins, Israel Rivera Wednesday. Catch me back on the Nerdport Network, on the Nerd Zone with Ronnie, John, and Ryan Shaw. Fridays, you can catch me on College Football Showdown with Israel Rivera on Prime Sports World, the network. Saturdays and Sunday mornings, you can catch me on What's On Tap, my little online pregame show where I'm looking ahead to what's catching my eye in college football and the NFL. Man, I hope you guys have a great week. Huge shout out to my family, my incredible mother who just celebrated her birthday last week. So happy late birthday again, mother. Love you to life. Love you to pieces. My beautiful sister, Taylor. My dad. Love you, young man. So proud of my sister. She's doing a lot of great things in her field in the tech industry. My son, better known as my dog, Steve's, and my other siblings, Sean, Denise, Tanisha. Some of my closest friends, Kevin Cooper, go check out his blog, thecatch.blog. Huge shout out to him, his wife, and his baby girl, Evelyn, better known as Evie. My friend, Josh, his wife, Diana, who just celebrated their 9th wedding anniversary. Happy anniversary. And a shout out to their 3 beautiful daughters, Tiffany, Natalie, and Madison. I hope school is treating you guys, and it's off to a great start. Some of my other friends, Robert Butler, Candace Carter, Kim Mel Fryer, whose birthday is coming up. Happy birthday, Kim, if you're listening to this. I hope it's a legendary year for you. Jason Tyree, Corey Harris, Deshaun Elliott, Rob Carter, Mike Griffin, Alex Bennett, and so many of you who have supported the Daily Blitz. A huge shout out to my co-analyst, who I'm going to try and get on this show, Cole Johnson, and our moderator, D. Man, he really keeps us on our feet. And a huge shout out to everybody else that's allowed me to come on and contribute for them. And one more show I forgot to plug. You can catch me on The Sports Cubicle every Sunday, or some Sundays, on WCPT 8:20 a.m. in Chicago, Illinois, with Paul Shavari, Devin Tingle, Michael Angelo Mercado, and Dan Marvin. This has been Monday Evening Quarterback on Spotify, YouTube, Twitch, Blog Talk Radio, and the Nerdport Network. I'm Christian Simpson. Have an amazing week and enjoy Monday Night Football tonight.